Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Back, I think this is the first time we've done back-to-back days in the history of this show. Back for a second day. Today, it's going to be all about you guys. It's going to be all about answering questions and comments coming in from the chat. We've got some questions from yesterday that we weren't able to get to that we're going to get to today. Some things going on around the league right now. Unfortunately, no LeBron decision, but we're going to pinball through a lot of different topics. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jovan Buha, Pete Zayas. Guys, I get to see you guys 2 days in a row. This is awesome.
Great. Yeah.
What a treat. Great to see you guys.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into this here. Somebody said, Trev looking more rested. I did put a bit more emphasis on sleep last night. You know, this is the first day I feel actually recovered from Las Vegas. So that's the stage I'm in right now. But let's go here. Let's go to a super chat question that came in yesterday. Of course, we're starting with this one. Lawrence Frank calls, says he'll trade Derek Jones Jr. for Vando, Dalton Connect, and 2 seconds. But Trevor has to become Clipper Nation. Pete has to be Clipper Film Room. And Jovan has to go back to covering the Clippers. Are we accepting that deal?
Hell no.
Are we taking one for the team here?
For Derek Jones Jr. I'm not doing that for anybody, but for Derek Jones Jr., come on. You got to think a little higher of us than that. I'm a little insulted by this.
what is the level of player that it would take?
That's the thing. I shouldn't have left it open like that. No, I'm a Laker for life, man. It's not happening.
What if San Antonio called with Wemby?
It's not. Look.
For 2 seconds.
If y'all want to trade me.
The thing is,
if you want to trade me for Wemby.
That's the thing is that you wouldn't get to enjoy Wemby on the Lakers. No, you'd be Spurs Film Room.
Look, if y'all want to trade me to the Spurs for Wemby, I totally understand. I'll not be happy about it, but I will understand. Wemby. Right, yeah. But, yeah, no, not happening.
I would feel like Anthony Davis in that moment. I would say I'd be mad I got traded, but I'd be like, yeah, I get it. Yeah. I get it, though. I get it. All right, let's go here. Guys, what's your take on Austin Reeves hitting the gym? Shouldn't he be doing that as of now instead of golfing? This has always been a bit of a pet peeve of mine. Now, I have no idea how often Austin is in the gym or not, but we tend to think that whatever a player posts on social media is the only things that they're doing. I know it's been, like, Austin Reeves prefers not to post his workouts to social media. Some people do, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I wouldn't see Austin posting golfing stuff as evidence that he is not also going to the gym and working out and doing all those things.
Yeah.
Player. I mean, think about an off day, how many hours you're up for 16 hours or whatever. You can go golf for a few hours and still have 10, 12 hours to work out and do other things. So yeah, I get the optics of it, right? People want to see the guys in the gym showing that they're working on XYZ or weightlifting or whatever, but guys do plenty of that behind the scenes, and Austin is one of those guys who doesn't really publicize that.
By the way, I do think whether he puts it out there publicly and we see it or not, that one of the keys to the offseason is Austin Reeves does need to get stronger. It's probably past time for him to put on not maybe the proverbial 10 to 15 pounds a month, maybe not 15, but I think he does need to get physically stronger this summer. And that means hitting the weight room. That means, you know, the diet's got to be locked in and all of that, getting his protein and everything in order to start really packing on some muscle. I think that's going to be a key for him for next season.
I agree. Although if I had to choose between that and him having a consistent catch and shoot jump shot, that was, I'd probably pick that. And it's hard to do both at the same time. It's hard to put on weight and not kind of mess with the mechanics of your jump shot. And then on the whole idea of like posting your workouts in the on court and whatnot, I stopped coaching high school ball, I want to say around 2013 or so. So this is right when that whole phenomenon started beginning of like filming yourself and all that. And I had this one kid, it's summer workouts, so I can't like mandate anything, but it's like these are optional as you stare at the kids, right? Like optional to come to these, right?
I had this
one kid, you remember those, right? But I had this one kid that was pretty touch and go in terms of how often he'd come. There's this one time he came and had a buddy with his like camera and whatnot, and you know, was there for like 15 minutes, but it made it look between the weight room and between being on the court that he'd gotten a whole workout. And I'm like, what the hell is it? He did not make the team. But yeah, that was I'm fine with them not posting their stuff to social media.
Agreed. All right, this one. Lenny said, Jaden Hardy clears Gabe, and he's half the price. Why are we treating him like he's a bum? Also, give me any of Christian Brown, Cam Johnson, or P.J. Washington, P.J. Watson over the Kuminga drama. We're in terms of clearing Gabe Vincent, I don't think that's really the bar we should be setting for any of these players.
Jaden, there's a lot of guys that clear right. that bar. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's still a free agent, right? He hasn't been signed anywhere. I think he clears him offensively. I think Gabe clears him defensively. Jaden Hardy statistically is one of the worst defenders in the league. Literally like bottom one percentile, like, or your first percentile. So I don't think Jaden Hardy is a rotation player on a team with championship aspirations.
Totally agree with that. I also don't think that's kind of how he's projected in the first place on this.
No, team. I'm just saying, there's been that sentiment out there of like, oh, people are sleeping on Jaden Hardy. He's going to factor into the rotation. Like, I just don't see that.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. And I agree that I don't see that either. But I do agree that he's got a level of talent that, and he's 23 years old that, you know, Redick talked last year about how there were 90 some odd games at the end of the year, and only like five of them were involved lineups that he had actually projected at this point last summer. You know, that is, so there's going to be a level of injuries and attrition. And if Jaden Hardy is one of your next man up guards on a team that I think is really designed to have some scoring ability on the ball and off of it, that's pretty good. So I understand the premise behind the question of like, this dude's got some talent and that not to sleep on him. But I ultimately also think he's here really more for salary ballast. Like they wanted to get a couple of second round picks and they got that. And if he's able to help while he's here, that's great. But I don't think he'll be here long-term. We'll see.
Yeah. I see a lot of Lakers fans saying, well, you know, why wasn't that Cam Whitmore, somebody else, right, from the Wizards in that deal? Well, maybe the Wizards only wanted to take on so much salary, and Hardy was just very close while still giving the Lakers a little bit less money coming out of their books to Ayton in salary. I do think he's a bit superfluous when we look at the guard position. I think it makes Dalton Connect's slotting on the team even more difficult, perhaps even Bronny's, but I also don't think the Lakers are done. I don't think the roster as it looks right now is what it's going to look like come October. So maybe there's a point where we go, 2 weeks. Oh, right. Like it could certainly change very quickly.
A week, maybe Monday. We'll see how things play out this weekend.
Could be tomorrow.
I would say to both your points, like, I think he's an upgrade over the Kobe Bufkin, Nick Smith Jr. Mm-hmm. spot, right? And those were a couple of guys that when the Lakers were depleted, and even Bronny, at least on the offensive side, like I think he's more playable than those guys, and I think could step, like he could drop 20 points any given night in a bench role when the Lakers are depleted. So like I do see the value in that, but I think if we're talking about again, I most of my stuff with the Lakers roster and rotation, I'm trying to judge it through the OKC, San Antonio, New York lens of like playing at that level. I just don't see him being up in, you know, that rotation.
Well, speaking of that, I got a number of questions that are essentially all asking the same thing. If Kawhi Leonard's contract gets voided, would you want him on the Lakers? First of all, I am skeptical that the NBA will go so far as to void his contract. Could we see a suspension or something like that? If guilt is established, maybe, but let's say we're living in a world where the NBA comes in and they say, Kawhi, we're voiding your contract. And Kawhi says, well, if I got to sign somewhere as a free agent, I'd rather just stay in LA and I want to be a Laker. The Lakers have really leaned into 20-year-olds, with the exception of Kevon Looney, who's just barely 30. Kawhi would definitely be an outlier in that sense. But if Kawhi says, yo, I really want to stay in LA, we got caught, I'll take a veteran minimum to be a Laker. What are you guys saying?
Hell yeah, man. Kawhi Leonard is still a monster. Are you kidding me? Like, he can get hurt, but if he's on a vet min contract, like, really the version of this Lakers team that I thought, you know, might have a chance to compete is the one where it's basically they've done what they've done, and then LeBron joins it on that lower type of contract. Kawhi had, what, 31? Remember how they did the All-Star game is sort of like one quarter at a time? And he had that one game with, like, 31 in the quarter, and he's still one of the better players in the NBA that actually gets you at least a ceiling, Jovan, of shoot, they could compete for a title if I just don't see any world where this happens. But yeah, you get Kawhi on a vet minimum. Hell yeah.
I thought he was a top 10 player last year when healthy and available, which is obviously a limited limited time with him. But for a vet minimum, obviously you do it. I mean, we kind of discussed this yesterday. I said that I think if he ends up having his contract voided, he's just going to go sign a minimum in Toronto, which will be a further punishment for the Clippers of you don't get to do the trade and then you just lose Kawhi to the team you're trading with for nothing and he signs the minimum. So yeah, I think that's how that plays out if it goes that route.
I still think the punishment for the Clippers should be that Kawhi is put on the Lakers. I think that would be the most painful outcome for them. That should be the Clippers.
That's worse than like going to the Raptors for them.
Yeah. I like that idea.
And winning a championship. Take it to the next level. Like,
let's go.
Kawhi, the king, the new king of LA. Well, he's doing it with the Lakers.
Oh, I love it. Sound Automotive Group. That would be, I want to live in that world. Going into the season with Kuminga and Luka as the wings responsible for Mobley, Aaron Gordon, Bam Adebayo, Paolo Banchero, Jaren Jackson Jr., Kat, Holmgren, etc., is punting on the season. What do you guys think about that idea that punting on the season would be the equivalent of having Kuminga and Luka as your primary wing defenders, at least in a theoretical starting lineup?
I think that's pretty dramatic.
I would disagree with that. And I mean, this is where, so I did a depth chart breakdown last night, and I, similar to Pete, have Jake LaRavia starting temporarily. I think the Lakers are looking for an upgrade, clearly. And if they get Kuminga, PJ Washington, someone of that ilk, that player will clearly start and then slot Jake in a bench role, which I think is the more appropriate role. Like, I'm not advocating for Jake as a starter. I just think reading the tea leaves here, like, Mamu to me is too defensively limited in a wing context of that means you're either asking Luka or Mamu to be that wing stopper. I don't think that makes any sense whatsoever. So to me, the Mamu situation is similar to Rui, where just based on the fit limitations with Luka and Mamu defensively, I think Mamu has to be a bench guy. Then you get to Zaire Williams, and you know, maybe I think he's probably the biggest competition for Jake as a starter, but I like Jake better against fours than Zaire Williams. I think Zaire a little bit on the skinnier side, not as much scalability up there. Also, Jake is a notably better rebounder than Zaire. Then you get into like the Cam Carr, Vando, Adu range where Carr and Adu, I just don't think they're going to throw players that are that young. We got to get JJ to play those guys first before he's even like considering starting them. And then Vando, we just have a sample size of 2 years where if JJ can have any alternative to Vando, he will pick that alternative. So just by process of elimination, I think it's more of a conversation between Jake, Mamu, and Zaire. But I think Zaire has the least utility of those three in terms of guarding up and guarding bigger guys. Mamu versus Jake, you know, is a conversation just from a talent perspective. But again, I think Mamu can't guard wings. So Jake to me is the one who can check both forward boxes, but I don't feel great about it. And so if you get the Kuminga, that's where, like, yes, Jonathan Kuminga, I think, has his limitations defensively. And is he going to be bought in? Is he going to be playing hard every night? I don't have the answer to that, but I think getting a Kuminga, PJ Washington, someone of that ilk, to me is not punting on the season. And I think that player puts the Lakers in a much better position than they're currently in.
You also can't have like $30 million players at every single position, right? Like, yeah, you could have the same argument for other teams, be like, oh, we're paying this player $15 million a year to go up against Luka Doncic. How's that going to work? Like, pretty much everybody you listed on that list was a $30 million player or more. We've got that guy at our center spot. And that's who's largely responsible for holding that down. Would I like a better starting four than Jonathan Kuminga? Absolutely. But in the type of price range that we're talking about, like, not everybody can make that $30 million plus contract.
Yeah, you're not going to have an edge at every single spot on the floor. And that also doesn't make it fair to discount the areas where you do have an edge over your opponents, or to look at that one spot that you don't and say, well, see, that's it. You're done. Yep. Because you don't have an advantage there. I think that there are going to be things stylistically that this Lakers team is going to be able to do if they do add a Jonathan Kuminga, or it could be somebody else that they get for that role. I think it needs to be somebody. It needs to be not just Jake LaRavia starting at that spot, because I do think that's probably the way they would go right now if they had to make the choice. It would probably wind up being Laravia. I think they do need to get somebody for that slot. But just because you may be at a disadvantage when comparing that player to an Evan Mobley or a Karl Anthony Towns or someone along those lines, that doesn't mean that all hope is lost for the team, because guess what? They've also got this guy named Luka that a lot of teams are going to have a real hard time matching up with. So all teams are going to have strengths and weaknesses. Just because the Lakers may be a bit deficient at one spot, as long as they can mitigate that to some degree based on where they're at right now, I'm not writing them off this coming season, certainly. All right, let's go here. Kenrich Williams is available, and I think we should acquire him. Keep our draft capital for a February trade deadline. Do you think? Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I could be misremembering. Maybe yeah. I'm going to Mon Shumpert here. Didn't Kenrich Williams agree to terms with the Thunder on a new deal?
Yeah, he resigned there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we can.
I think it was like 2 years, that. $10 million, something like that.
Right. All right. Let's go here then. Kar Thiro Vando plus
one year, $5 million.
1 year, $5 million. Okay.
Yeah.
So there you go. This is tough. Kar Thiro and Vando plus all the picks for Peyton Watson. We're seeing these guys, Kar and Thiro, be successful in summer league. Mm-hmm. The Lakers play again today. They just keep on winning. Are you open to moving them if Peyton Watson is the return?
Yes, I am. I want this to be a title team. And I like Watson. I think he'd be a great fit at that forward spot. It's tough, though, watching. It's always fun to get a new young player that, like, oh, this guy's really good. But this opens a broader conversation, whether it's Watson or not, of that's part of the value of Kar and Adu from a team-building perspective, is there's been so much hand-wringing over, oh, well, Lakers don't have a tradable future first. You know what's more valuable than a tradable future first is a young player who's good now and under team control for the next 7 years. And so as hard as it would be for those guys to lose one or both of those guys, if either of them hit, Jovan, that becomes just a totally different equation from the Lakers' perspective. And that, to me, that's the ultimate goal. We want to build a team that wins a championship. I love watching young players, but if they can help us get via trade, like, really good players that can win now sooner than later. Luka's what, 28 years old? Like, they got to do as much of the work as they can. So if you can get Kessler and Watson in the same offseason, man, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, I was asked this exact question last night on my stream. I'm assuming by the same person. And it at first I said yes, then I started to think more about it. I think there is some concern here with Peyton Watson's health, where you are potentially taking a gamble with the hamstring situation. The flip side would be, I think realistically, if we're putting on the purple and gold tinted glasses here, we don't know if Cameron Carr or Adu Thiro will ever be as good as the version of Peyton Watson we just saw this past season. Like, I think there's a chance that either one can get to that level, but I think it's far from a guarantee. On top of that, though, realistically, I would say for Carr, it's like, maybe year three at the earliest, he's as good as like this past year's version of Peyton Watson. Adu, maybe similarly, like two more years. Like, I think they're probably 2 to 3 years away from hitting the current version of Peyton Watson. Like, I think people, you can look at his season long numbers, but he had a stretch there where they were shorthanded and he stepped into a larger role. He was averaging 20 plus points a game, defending the best or second best perimeter guy and shooting 40% from three. So to just, you know, assume that Cameron Carr or Adu Thiro is going to get to that level in the next 2 to 3 years, I think there's a little bit of wish casting there. I'm not saying it's impossible. I think there is a chance they could do that. But Peyton Watson is already proven and really broke out in a major way this past season. So I think if you like it, to me, that would vault the Lakers into a different tier where I think you can put them in that conversation with OKC or San Antonio right now if they just added Peyton Watson and basically kept their current depth. So I would lean yes. I wouldn't feel great about it in the context of just worrying about his hamstring and what Adu and Carr could potentially become. But I also think there's an element here of what's his contract. And like, if you're getting a decent value on his contract, if you're able to squeeze him and he's making like $15 million, $18 million AAV, like, I think it's a great value too, where you might not, like, Cameron Carr might be making more than that on his next contract. You could be getting Peyton at a discount.
The number that came in here in the question I should have thrown in was $24 million average annual value for Peyton Watson.
I would do that.
24.
Yeah, I still think that's fair. Now, my understanding, I think Denver is going to just squeeze him and keep him. Like Denver, yeah. I mean, they want the Walker Kessler package. So I think that's the other side of this is Denver. I don't think Denver does this or entertains this trade offer. I think they retain Peyton Watson.
I think that if we suspend disbelief and Denver is willing to do this, it would essentially come down to a couple of things. And it would come down to, first and foremost, what do the Lakers think about Peyton Watson's hamstring? Do they think this is going to be a chronic recurring thing, or do they think this is just, hey, it was an unlucky season? If it was just an unlucky season, obviously that checks that box and you move on. Then from there, it's, do you believe Peyton Watson is the guy we saw in January? Is that what he is when he's given a bigger role, or is he more of kind of the high-level role player type guy? What is his actual ceiling in the NBA? He did shoot lights out in the month of January, which was, you know, maybe a bit above his head. Those numbers are expected to drop down, but he was like a 20-5 guy on incredible percentages when given that bigger opportunity in Denver. Do you believe that's what he really is, or was that just a hot month from him? If you believe that's what he really is, then you do this kind of deal. If you think he's a nice luxury to have, a high-level role player, but nothing more than that, and maybe you've got some injury concerns, then you're probably not going to surrender these guys to get him. But it's always a challenge this time of year. You know, if we asked this question a week and a half ago, a bunch of Lakers fans would say, yep, 100%, give a Duke Thero up, trade him now. He's out of control, right? We've seen these guys be successful, so it's hard to then turn around and say, we're going to move on from these guys. But on a team that's got Luka, that's ready to win right now, if Peyton Watson is that guy and you're confident in his health, you believe that he's going to vault you into that tier with San Antonio and OKC, you got to consider doing something like this.
Trevor, I got a question for you, kind of a follow-up. Yep. That if we're not suspending disbelief here and say that he does end up back with Denver, they're only like $3 million under the second apron right now. Mm-hmm. They probably need to move somebody. Who would you guess shakes free in Denver if Peyton Watson is resigned?
I think they'd like to move Christian Brown, but I'm starting to come around to the idea that they're going to go above that second apron, that they're at least will consider it. Really? I know they don't want to, but here's why. Jokic hasn't put pen to paper yet. Mm-hmm. So how do you go salary dump Cam Johnson and say, hey, big fella, here's a contract, but sign it. We just got worse. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's a tough sell. I think Jokic is holding their feet to the fire a little bit, and they don't want to jettison talent in order to drop below the second apron and then hope that he's going to sign that contract extension. So I'll tell you what, if he starts to make any kind of noise about, I'm not 100%, I'm going to re-sign or anything, I don't think that's the way it's going to go. But Denver's got to be sweating it out a little bit here. And I tend to think, and this is not sourced or anything, this is just my opinion, but I tend to think that that's a big factor in why we haven't seen them salary dump anybody right now, is that Nikola Jokic has not signed that contract extension. And as of this moment, he could be a free agent next summer. Oof,
it's a lot of money.
That's a lot. All right, everybody, we're going to get to a few more questions, comments. First, let's give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can use the link in the description down below. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. The World Cup raging on. My goodness, what a game that was between Argentina and England yesterday. I am going to go. All you got to do is pick more or less on some of your favorite players. I'm going to go with Kylian Mbappe. I'm going to say he gets at least one goal or assist. And then Leo Messi. Hasn't paid off for me the last couple of games, but I'm going to keep riding with Messi here. I'm going to say he gets a goal against Spain. If you guys want to get in on it, use that code HMA. Play $5. Get $50 instantly in your lineups. And a big shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring the show. All right, got a few more from yesterday we're going to get into. If we can turn Vando and Connect into Sadiq Bey and Spencer Jones, somehow we get Rui's replacement and a point of attack defender at the cheap and keep our youth. You know, Jovan, we've talked a little bit about that maybe could Spencer Jones, who is the kind of forgotten restricted free agent on the Denver Nuggets behind Peyton Watson, could he be a guy that you challenge Denver on, knowing where they're at financially, and maybe get him relatively cheap? Now, the Lakers, as of this moment, they only have veteran minimums to spend. But Spencer Jones is an interesting name that's out there right now that you could really test Denver, and maybe it's not the Lakers that do it. What are your thoughts on him and how precarious the situation is right now with the Nuggets?
Yeah, I think he's a guy who's probably going to be gettable just based on the way things are playing out, especially if they do end up retaining Peyton Watson and going above the second apron, or if they have to shed some money, like they can trade one of those guys, but still it might not make, depending on where they're at, like too much sense to retain Spencer Jones, especially above a minimum. If he's a minimum guy, then maybe he just stays there. It's a 1-year deal or something, and then he retests the market next summer. But I would pursue a potential sign and trade. Like that's one thing the Lakers could do just based on their financial flexibility. It was interesting last night. I was going through which teams could even help facilitate a dump with the Lakers in terms of maybe you expand the Kuminga trade to like a 3-team deal where like Atlanta has a full roster. I think that's something we do have to acknowledge when we talk about a Kuminga trade. Atlanta has 15 guaranteed contracts already without even factoring in Kuminga. So some of these deals where it's like, let's send 2 or 3 guys to Atlanta. I don't think that's going to be appealing for Atlanta. So I think realistically, the more I've thought through it, like a Kuminga trade is probably a 3-team trade where whichever guys the Lakers are sending out probably get rerouted to that third team, and then Atlanta just sends out Kuminga and gets the draft capital. Looking at, like, there's not many teams that are under the first apron, not many teams that are under, you know, around kind of the cap. So there are limited suitors in that regard. But I think for, if you're the Lakers and you can leverage that, I'd be willing to pay Spencer Jones $5 million, $6 million, like a little bit above the minimum. And if you have to send out a second round pick, I'd probably be cool with that too. So if you could do something like, you know, that's part of the deal, and that gives Denver a little bit of, you know, relief or whatever, that they get a second round pick for him. Like, I would do that. So I think there's different ways to explore potentially dumping some of the salary or acquiring some talent. But Spencer Jones, like, if you could sign him for a minimum, clear the space, and that works, that's great. Keep the second. But I would go as far as to be like $5 million, $6 million for 2-3 year deal. I'd be cool with that and even give up a second.
Totally agree. Really like Spencer Jones. I like where this listener's heads at. I like both of those players. And Lakers have liked Sadiq Bey for a long time. And he just had too good of a season last year to, I think, make the Pelicans want to be like, yeah, let's trade this guy who, remember they signed him. He tore his Achilles, I think, or his ACL, like right before he was supposed to hit free agency. And the Pelicans signed him to a 3-year deal where basically they were like, we're going to pay you for your first year to recover, but then we're going to get the next 2 seasons at kind of a discount. And so I'd love to get him, but I think that they probably value him more than what we could give out on that. And if they were to move him, it'd probably be closer to the deadline. But like both of those guys, yeah.
I think that's probably a true statement for every Pelicans player, that they value them more than what...
What are they doing? Yeah.
It's amazing. It's a head scratcher. I don't understand what the Pelicans are doing. They're taking they're winning like whatever, 36 games or something like that, and valuing their guys like they're a championship team. It's strange times in New Orleans, that's for sure.
Well, then they botched the DeAndre Jordan signing too.
Yes.
But did they... So they put out there, they made it known that, well, there were other teams that he would have signed with on if it was just a 1-year veteran minimum. Now that begs the question, though.
I will call BS on that.
You think that was lying? You think that is along the lines of the Bucks floating out there, that there was another team that would have given Gary Trent a similar contract?
So... I've thought DeAndre Jordan, I've been shocked at like the last 5 contracts that he's gotten. Like, he's still in the league type of thing. So, I mean, maybe, but I don't know.
I mean, a 2-year, like, yeah, I don't see a situation where even if someone was interested in him at a minimum, he was going to be playing as much as he played last year in New Orleans. Like, you know, maybe there was a contender or something that was like, we want him as our 15th man. But I just don't see a situation where he would have gotten the same contract and played as much as New Orleans. So I just, that one I'm flabbergasted by.
I mean, unfortunately, the Lakers made the same mistake with Marc Gasol a few years back, giving him a 2-year deal. But Marc Gasol, obviously a different tier of player than DeAndre Jordan. Does it worry you at all that the Pelicans chose DeAndre Jordan over Kevon Looney effectively?
A little bit.
I'll say I've had limited conversations with New Orleans people. I've already talked about this, but like, they have not been very optimistic about Looney and where he's still at. And there was a reason why he was playing behind. I mean, obviously Queen and Misi, they invested a ton in, so it makes sense. But even playing behind DeAndre, like, he was effectively their 4th string center for a lottery team. So like, that's not the greatest sign, especially coming off the year he had before. Cause I think 2 years ago he had a really solid season, and especially in like a backup context, a lot of his metrics were great, and then he just had this precipitous drop off this past year where he went from being like a solid backup level guy to looking unplayable. So, you know, we'll see if he's able to bounce back.
All right. Joey wants to know Dalton Connect, Vando, Hardy and Jake for Jeremy Grant. No picks. I don't know if I'm Memphis, if I'm doing that. I mean, I guess you're clearing a lot of salary on the second year of the deal, and you do get Connect in there. Opens the three roster spots to give to Mannion and Kaluma, he notes, 40% on threes. Had a nice bounce back year last year. Two seasons ago was really, really rough shooting the ball. Bounced back last year. Now finds himself in Memphis.
Can you repeat the trade?
Yeah, so it would be Connect, Vando, Jaden Hardy, and Jake Laravia for Jeremy Grant.
I don't know, that's roughly 28, 29 million. So you Grant's making 34. So you're taking on, I mean, I guess this would kind of speak to the conversation we had yesterday about doing your pre-agency and getting that player. Now I would rather look for a cheaper alternative in the short term and then go get a longer term piece next summer rather than, because like Jeremy Grant's, this is going to be his age 32 season next year, age 33. So even if Grant is like this great fit for the next year or two, there's not really a long-term future there. So I would be looking for someone who's a bit younger and fits a longer-term timeline.
Yeah, it's not about what they're giving up in that instance. It's more like the salary slot that he occupies. And he hasn't really been that defensive presence in quite some time. It doesn't seem to be what he really wants to do. Talented offensive player for sure, and you know, can knock down some threes. And if his salary was like half of what he was making, I'd be a lot more interested. But at 34 million, I just think it limits flexibility in too many other places.
Somebody is asking why we're not putting super chats on the screen. These are yesterday's, and the system doesn't save them when we start a new show. So I had to save them and don't have them to put up right now. But we will get to today's in just a moment here. We're almost through yesterday's. A few questions essentially asking the same thing. If Kuminga doesn't work, what do the Lakers do? If you don't wind up getting Kuminga, how do you pivot if you're LA? Can you just accept the roster as is? Is that where we get into the Matisse Thybulle stuff from this morning? What do the Lakers do? Pete, if the Lakers are not getting Jonathan Kuminga, where do they go?
It's my biggest concern right now. Spencer Jones factors into this. I actually think pursuing him would be one of the better options at that point. I'm skeptical the degree to which PJ Washington is available, like how real that is or not. I don't think we can get Peyton Watson. If Denver didn't want to pay all that extra money, if Cam Johnson filling that spot for a year, I think he's not really a four, but I think he would, is that like forward who can guard that would be helpful in that respect. But this is my biggest worry right now. And I think that if, like somebody asked earlier, if you have Kuminga and Luka, are you punting on the season? I don't think so. If you've got Jake starting at the four, yeah, you kind of are. I think that like they need somebody of a certain level of quality, Jovan, to just slot everybody else into a more appropriate role. That it's my biggest worry right now if Kuminga doesn't work out.
I agree. That's where I honestly, like I might just try to push in for Spencer Jones on that two or three potential deal. And that might, like, I would probably start him over Jake, I think at that point. Right. And that I think probably properly slots guys. Cause I agree. Like that's where my biggest current gripe with this version of the roster is if we're talking, if the three candidates to be the fifth starter are Mamu, Jake, and Zaire Williams, in my opinion, like I just think neither of those guys should be starting on a true contender. So, or Mamu, I think could start in a specific build, but I don't think the rest of the Lakers starting group is that build. So I just think that they have to address that in some form or fashion. Now is that like Matisse, I think I still have some questions about whether he's truly a starter on like a good team or just more of like a nice bench player. And so he's, I guess, a cheaper alternative to Spencer Jones, where he's probably going to go for the minimum and maybe he could slot in there as the placeholder starter. But I would like Spencer Jones to me would probably be the minimum, and he would be someone who I'd feel more comfortable with starting compared to the current group of players.
But even then, is Spencer Jones like a starter on your championship
Probably
team?
Not.
Like, I think he's better than Jake.
I mean, this is a clear need that they would need. Yeah. They could either address at the trade deadline or they could address next summer in, you know, free agency.
That's a scenario where, and I am not in favor of go down this path, where you go into the season saying, we're going to get by at that starting wing spot with, you know, maybe Jake LaRavia fills that role, maybe somebody else, maybe I got somebody pops in a way that we weren't expecting, right? And we put them in that spot. But then we're going to truly address it next summer. That's what we're going to use our non-taxpayer mid-level for, that we've been kind of structuring contracts to prepare for. Or maybe we use the pre-agency concept and we do that at the trade deadline. Personally, though, I'm tired of that. I'm sick of going into seasons with a clear deficiency on the roster and saying, well, okay, you know, maybe we'll address this later. We'll fix it. No, I want to go into a season with a roster that makes sense, that is fully assembled, and we can start developing chemistry from day one. That's what I want to see happen here. But if Kuminga is a no-go, I don't know what the path of doing that ultimately will be, unless there's perhaps a trade that we don't know about yet. Look, sometimes you got to love this league. Sometimes stuff comes from out of nowhere. But my ideal scenario is you give up a couple of pieces to get Jonathan Kuminga. You open up a roster spot. Give me both Kuminga and Matisse Thybul. Mm-hmm. I would love to add Matisse Thybul to this team with his defensive chops. I think you add Kuminga, you add Matisse Thybul to Zaire Williams coming in, and next thing you know, okay, you've got some defensive pieces on this roster. You've added some offensive punch. Off you go. And I think I'd be pretty excited about this team at that point, even as not the biggest Jonathan Kuminga guy. But what I really don't want to see when the dust settles, guys, and I am a little bit nervous that this is the path we may ultimately end up going down, is you don't get Kuminga and it's stopgap time at the spot for at least up until the trade deadline, if not next summer.
Yeah.
All right, let me go here. Is Kaluma actually 6'7"? He plays so much bigger. Yeah. I don't know. Jovan, you're taller than I am. We were standing there with him at Summer League. Did he feel about 6'7" to you?
Bringing out the height calculator in my head. Yeah, I would say he's maybe 6'7.5", maybe, like just under 6'8". But, you know, he's I would classify him as like a smaller power forward. But when we're talking, especially in like a bench context, I don't know how much that distinction matters. And I think that he does play above his, like, if you squint and watch, he does look like Naz Reid out there. I do see that comparison for some people. He's not quite, but like Naz also has his limitations where you don't want to play him exclusively at the five, like too much, especially in certain contexts. So, you know, he's not the five that Naz Reid is, but like that general archetype, I do see that floor spacing four, I guess, that, you know, so yeah, I think he's, I'd say like 6'7.5".
And so he's got a good wingspan, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Lakers got smaller Naz Reid in Arthur Kaluma, and we have smaller Trey Murphy in Cameron Carr. When do we get the same? We get the same guys, just miniature versions.
Smaller Wemby and Kessler, right?
Yeah. there you go. That's it. Let's set that bar. Can Mamu be this era's Lamar off the bench? Mm.
Lefty big off. It's funny, like Mamu's actually the guy that reminds me of Naz in terms of his game. That,
yeah,
like Naz is so fun because he's such an incredible ball handler and he can do all of these crazy gathers that you only really see from guards mostly, and then flip some BS, you know, cross his body and knock it down off of the glass. You know, like he's got such great touch and ball handling ability that that's who I see Mamu being kind of similar to. Lamar, I mean, Lamar was the number three pick in the draft, and high school Lamar and Rhode Island Lamar, like back, he was what, the 99 draft, I believe. Like Lamar was, he's got an argument for being one of the better players to never make an all-star team. So I think that's a little bit high of a bar. He was the third best player on back-to-back title teams. That I don't see that from Mamu, but I definitely see that, you know, big man with some ball handling, a lefty that can do a little bit of everything. So I like it, but I think it's a little ambitious for Mamu.
Agreed.
I agree. I think he could play like the general role slash archetype of being that third big who can play either the four or the five. And to me, I would say one distinction I see between Mamu and Naz is I think Mamu's a much better passer than Naz. Like Naz does have the handle and the wiggle and you know, maybe a bit more athletic. But I think Mamu to me is like the passing where he could be the DHO or just high low hub. That to me is a bit of a distinction there. But yeah, I mean, he's not Lamar. He's not going to be Lamar. No one is Lamar. That's a very high bar. But I think he can be like, that's, I think, the ideal slotting of him is that third big who could come in, either play the four in a double big look or play the five in a bench look. And either way, I think he can have success.
This question is just all kinds of gross here. The custodian said, would you rather have the Clippers win the first chip or the Celtics win two more? Said me, I'll say we can always catch up to the Celtics and will, but keeping the Clippers at zero, that is priceless. Man, I don't know, guys. I'm just rooting for the media or for the meteor at that point.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I don't want to see either one of those things happen. Like a Celtics Clippers championship is just, I don't know. I'm gonna fully disconnect and go to some deserted island somewhere and pretend it's not happening or something.
There's only one scoreboard that matters to me, and it's 18-17 right now. And I've wanted my whole life, like, I wanted us to catch and pass the Celtics in titles. And when I was born, I think it was like 11-4. They were up by a lot, and we tied them very briefly. But to me, the Clippers, like, they don't even register for me, Jovan. Like, that's the only other team that I see that I got my sights on is the Celtics.
Yeah, I'm with you.
No, I'm staying out of this one. Yeah. I don't root for results. But
he abstained.
I have my perspective, yeah.
All right. As somebody who grew up during the Showtime era, I absolutely cannot go behind the Celtics at all. $2 for 2 days in a row. Let's go. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Tyler said, I said in Jovan's live yesterday, Grimes is an elite defender. His metrics show it. And he locked down both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and helped Philly beat Boston. Are we underselling, guys, are we underselling Quentin Grimes as a defender?
I think a little bit. He had that job pretty much exclusively with a good Knicks team that went to the first or second round of the playoffs in 23, I want to say it was. That was a team that had RJ Barrett as the wing next to him, who can guard a little bit, but that's not really the main thing he does. Had Hartenstein at the five, and Grimes had the responsibility of whoever the best dude was on the other team. That's who he defended, and he did a pretty good job. Like, the things that I noticed is that at a certain point, the size and physicality, like, Kawhi's just dotting jumpers over the top of him, and he's 6'4", 6'5". What is he going to do about that? And the guys who are short and but have a ton of ball handling and wiggle, they're a little too fast for him. The Trey Youngs, Donovan Mitchells, ideally you don't kind of leave him alone on an island on any of those guys, but he had such a wide range of who he was responsible for, and he moves his feet well, he's got good technique, and he is always going to get his hand up to contest, and he can do that early. And even if you're short, there's more places on a jump shot to disrupt it than way up high, like a Cam Carr is going to do. If you can disrupt that by getting your hand up early, you can disrupt the shooting stroke and them actually bringing it up to get the jumper up. So I totally see where Tyler's coming from on this. I do think, though, that you need kind of a partner with him, Jovan, like that idea of a guy who can take those bigger guys.
So I will say two things here. One, I agree that we are probably collectively under selling Grimes defensively, and that's been probably my biggest shift in how I view the roster, how I view the construction, based on like the initial flurry of moves to now. Because my first thing was like, I just don't think Quentin Grimes can be the best defender on the perimeter on a championship team. And that was like, the Lakers are effectively, with the current roster construction, asking him to be Derek White. And I just don't think he's Derek White. Like, they're asking, can you be the best perimeter guy and also be the third option offensively? I think that's an over ask for Quentin Grimes. Even I would assume for most people that are like super optimistic about Quentin Grimes, like that is a level. I mean, Derek White's a top, he's been a top 50 player for, you know, a half decade now. Like, that's just a really high bar that if he hits, like, that would be great. But I just think that's asking a lot. I would push back a little bit with a couple things here. So, one, if you look at I wouldn't say there's any great all-in-one defensive metrics, but if you look at estimated plus minus, he rates as a 61st percentile defender, which is above average, but not great. Defensive LeBron, he was a minus 0.61 last year, which also is in, I don't have the current percentile in front of me. It's above average, but it's still like not much above average. And if you actually look at his matchup data, which isn't perfect, so I will acknowledge this is not all, like some of the defensive stuff, it gets a little wonky. He primarily matched up with Peyton Pritchard, Derek White, and Sam Hauser in that series. Actually, Peyton Pritchard, he defended for 29 minutes as the most frequent defender against him. The next guy he defended the most was Derek White at 7 minutes. So there was a 22-minute gap there. So you have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum way farther down this list. And according to NBA.com's matchup data, he only guarded Brown for 7 field goals and Tatum for 4. So I would just say, I think this, like, the metrics paint him more as somewhere between like an above average to solid defender. Mm-hmm. He does have the A- grade in perimeter ISO defense, but there's more than just that specific thing. And then the actual matchup data with him against Boston's guys, JB and Tatum were far lower on the list than some of the other guys. So I would just point that out.
That was Oubre and Paul George really handling those guys a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now the Celtics don't have to worry about Paul George anymore.
Well
maybe they do. Just in a different way. All right, we're going to get to some more questions here in just a moment. First, a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Factor.
We're going to pause for just a moment to give a shout out to our sponsor, Factor. Lakers fans, life gets busy, and finding time to plan, shop for, and cook a good meal isn't always easy. That's where Factor comes in. Factor delivers fresh, never frozen meals straight to your door. They're fully prepared, ready in just 2 minutes, and designed to make eating well much more convenient. With a wide variety of rotating meals and options for different nutrition goals, Factor makes it easier to stay on track without spending hours in the kitchen. I especially like that I can keep a few meals ready for busy days when I don't have time to cook or order something. And personally, I really like that they have a lot of high protein options as well. So if you're into working out, you can check out Factor and get your protein needs met there. There's no grocery shopping, no meal prep, barely any cleanup. Just heat it up, enjoy it, and get back to your day. I use Factor, and you should too. Head to factormeals.com/LakersPod50off and use code LakersPod50off to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with a new subscription only while supplies last until September 27th, 2026. See website for more details. Thank you again to Factor for sponsoring today's show.
All right, and a big shout out to Factor for sponsoring. All right, let's go here. The ideal seems to be dumping Vando plus 2 of Dalton, Bronny, Hardy, etc., and bringing in Kuminga and Thibault. This will go a long way to cutting the dead weight. What's a trade that could realistically do that? Well, so I think the biggest challenge is moving off of Jared Vanderbilt. There was that report from a week or two ago that it would cost the pick swap in order to move off of Vando, turn him into Kuminga. Whether or not that's accurate about what the Hawks would take,
I don't think so.
Yeah, that doesn't feel. My sense has been that it would take a first just to move off of Vando's contract. So what are you willing to give up draft capital wise if it means getting Jonathan Kuminga and having Vando go out in the deal? Does it have to be everything? I'm talking about the pick swap, all the seconds. Is there some middle ground that we can find? Where do you guys land on that?
At this point, I assume if you're trading Vando and multiple guys, like if you throw in a couple more guys here, you're probably emptying the clip or getting close to emptying the clip. Like I would assume if Vando's in a deal, it's probably going to be 3 of the 4 draft assets in with some combination of giving something up for the incoming player and also attaching stuff to Vando. So that's where it gets. And I also wonder, I think Pete has talked about this recently, where maybe they just keep Vando and maybe it's just because of the cost to get off Vando, it's just better to keep him under contract and you could try to flip him at the trade deadline if the market changes with him, or next summer or the following trade deadline when he's an expiring, he has a little bit more value there. And then you could do a smaller move here where you are still able to dump some salary. You could like Dalton and Hardy, you get up to 10 million. You're above that 8.8 threshold into that second salary matching tier. And you don't have to necessarily give up anything more than maybe a second at like most. So I would reference like, I think the Nets, the Bulls, the Grizzlies, the Hornets have a trade exception. Those are some of the teams that could act as a third team in a potential Kuminga deal, mm-hmm. where you offload some of that salary to one of those teams. Maybe you attach a second just for you doing business with you, and then you do the primary Kuminga deal where, again, the Hawks get back nothing other than draft capital and you get back Kuminga. So I think that could be how it goes. And if you're sending out two or three players, you're obviously clearing one to two roster spots. Mm-hmm. Then you go sign the Thybulle or the Spencer Jones or someone like that.
Yeah, if you want Kuminga and Thybulle, like Kuminga, for one, Thybulle should just be a Vettman signing, so no issue there. And if you sent out Hardy and Dalton, I think you can get to enough salary to get Kuminga. I think that the window, Trev, for getting value out of salary dumping Vando is closed. As soon as we went over the salary cap, we were talking like, oh, maybe they might waive and stretch Vando, mm-hmm. or, you know, but salary dumping him now, like, you don't get any value out of that because by virtue of Austin's contract and all that, we're over the cap now. And so there isn't really any value in doing that. They want to use Vando and all of these salaries to add talent to the roster. But as you guys have laid out, that under his current contract status, he doesn't have as much value, but that flips in the expiring year. So I actually think that all of these guys, all the other guys are likelier. I would even throw Jake in this as well, to be moved before the end of the year. They're likelier than Vando. Now, Vando makes the biggest salary, though, by twice as much of the next guy. So he may need to be included if something pops up. But I actually don't think that Vando, and I actually kind of want to see Vando alongside a drop coverage big where we're not switching everything. Like, I think he could help in our circumstance as well. But from a team building process, I think they need to use Vando to increase the talent level on the team, but they can't do that if he's got multiple years left on his deal.
Yeah, if you told me the price to move off of him was minimal, okay, no problem, right? You can use that just from a salary perspective. But yeah, the opportunity was there to potentially waive and stretch him. And what that would have done is it would have opened up about $7 million more in cap space to potentially go play with. But obviously that ship has sailed. You're now above the cap. Waving him, stretching him doesn't do anything to open up any kind of spending power for the Lakers. So you may be better off just hanging on to him and waiting until next summer to do something there with him when he'll be an expiring contract. And maybe at that point, there'll be a team that'll be interested in offloading a long-term salary, and Vando's only got 1 year left. You know, they could also look again at the trade deadline too and say, you know what, there's not 2 years remaining on his deal. Now it's only a year and a half. Maybe that's something that we can do. I do think there is some utility for Jared Vanderbilt, you know, more time removed from his significant injuries. Does his defense revert back to what we saw before? I'll believe it when I see it, but I do think that it's becoming less likely by the day that the Lakers do move on from Jared Vanderbilt. Dalton Connect, on the other hand, I am in favor of them moving him, even if it ultimately winds up just being kind of a here you guys take him type of situation. I think they need to do right, not just by the Lakers themselves and open up a roster spot, but also do right by Dalton. He's got to get into a different situation if he's going to have a shot, because realistically, the Lakers have until Halloween to decide whether or not they want to pick up that next year option. And I just don't see things changing enough by them for them to do that. Maybe another team wouldn't as well, but I don't think Dalton's going to get the opportunity here. What we're really talking about for Dalton Connect is him potentially being out of the league a year from now, right? If he doesn't get a chance to fully show what he can do. And I just don't know that that's going to happen in LA. So my hope is that in some way he finds himself on another team between now and the start of the season, and that he can get those kinds of opportunities. And ideally the Lakers can benefit from that too. And if it means Jaden Hardy, fine. Jaden Hardy, Dalton Connect in a deal, off you go. Turn that into Jonathan Kuminga, and you're pretty happy going out the door there for the Lakers. To be honest, being traded for Wemby would be flattering.
It's true.
I will drive myself to the airport to be traded for Wemby. Kuminga, Matisse equals third best team in the West. Lakers greater than sign all Eastern Conference teams. You know, we talked about this a few weeks ago, I think, that no matter what, the Lakers were not going to have a roster on paper that looks better than the Thunder, that looks better than the Spurs, no matter what they do. And that with the players that were available in free agency, there was going to be some degree of the Lakers having to commit to some guys that would have to go into the season and prove the Lakers right in their commitment. That would have to prove that they are in a bigger role and a bigger opportunity, better than what we've seen from them so far. That's part of why I have a hard time slotting the Lakers, because very clearly they have committed to these players. But based on what we've seen from these guys so far, maybe they shouldn't have committed quite as much as they did. However, if these guys get into the season and play a role with the Lakers that allows them to be greater than the sum of their parts, then the Lakers will be proven right in that assessment. But it's hard to slot the Lakers without actually seeing them on the floor and seeing if their vision for this team is indeed correct or not. So I have a hard time saying they're just the third best team or whatever, because I need, this is a group that is so brand new. I really need to see these guys come together on the floor and see what does Rob Pelinka's vision look like and how does JJ Redick implement that.
So, I mean, I would say right now, I think the Lakers are in that third best team in the West conversation. I would probably pencil in the current version of Denver slightly ahead of them. I know for some people that's sacrilegious, and I get it because of the Denver-LA dynamic over the last few years. My point, I guess, would just be that I think Denver was, I mean, they missed more games with their top six, seven players than the Lakers did, and they still won one more game than them. Lakers, obviously, I think, would have finished ahead of them had Luka and Austin not gone out at the end of the season. But to me, that I mean, they still have that championship core that they're fighting Father Time right now, but like they still have that core there. And last season with Jokic, Murray, and Gordon, they went 20-6, had a plus 19 net rating. And like now they played 26 games. So that's the pushback against Denver. But I do think if we just assume like relative normal health for all these teams going into the season, which I think there's maybe some exceptions with like a guy like Embiid, AD, whatever. But like if we assume normal health, I do think the Nuggets on paper, I like their top six better than the Lakers top six. But that would be the exception here. Now, if you add Kuminga and Matisse to this, that shifts how I feel about it. And I would put the Lakers clearly as the third best team in the West, in my opinion. So right now, I think they're probably fourth for me. If they get Kuminga and really address that starting forward spot, I would put them fourth. And I mean, I would put them third and slide Denver to fourth.
Trevor, what do you think about Minnesota as they currently stand?
I think they're a big question mark, too. They're very different than they were last year. I need to see them out there on the court as well. They are similar in that they're also missing a power forward right now, unless they decide they're going to run McDaniels there at the four and just start a guy like Iwadosunmu, LaMelo Ball, and Anthony Edwards together, which would give them a lot of dribble pass shoot out there. I think their upside potential is high, but their floor could potentially be low if LaMelo proves to be a chaotic and perhaps disruptive influence on that team. I don't necessarily think that's the way it's going to go, but the possibility is certainly there. So Minnesota is a tough team to slot as well, similar to the Lakers in that we haven't seen them. We don't know how all the chemistry is going to work out on the court for them. I tend to think they're going to be pretty good. I think McDaniels, Gobert can do a lot defensively, and Edwards can be serviceable enough at that side of the ball that they'll be just fine, even with LaMelo out there. I would assume we certainly can do some things there too. So I think Minnesota is going to be good. Maybe it's my own bias. I tend to slot the Lakers in just a bit ahead of them, but there are a number of teams similar to how we went to last season that are all kind of in that mix for the third best team in the West. And I've got Minnesota in there, the Lakers in there, Denver, Houston. There'll be some other clubs too that I think can maybe make that step forward and potentially be there. That's what's going to be so exciting about the Western Conference, is that there are a lot of teams that are very similar in terms of overall quality, and they can finish in any kind of slotting.
I think they're going to be a bit vulnerable to injuries. Like their top five, I think even if they just go that small and fast, I think that if you've got Gobert back there, that can work. And I actually like the LaMelo Ant pairing. My concern with the LaMelo is how many games is he going to play? He had a pretty good year from that perspective this year, but like the last couple before then. And then who's the best player off the bench? Is it Bones Highland? Is it Terrence Shannon Jr.? Right? Like they have very little in the way of depth that if they lose any of those top five guys to a few games. And so like, we'll see, but I want people to apply the same level of scrutiny to other teams that they do to the Lakers and all of our holes and things like that. So like with Denver, I can get behind the argument they're better than the Lakers if they're doing that whole, like, we're going to bite the bullet and go into the second apron and bring everybody back. But how would you guys evaluate their position relative to OKC San Antonio if they just do that? And you got to talk to your owners and be like, yeah, we're going to take on tens of millions of more dollars for this team that, do we even believe they're on OKC San Antonio type of tier? Maybe it doesn't matter because of Jokic's circumstance and then it's all over, but the crying if you let him go. But like, I don't know. Like, I just want that same level of skepticism applied to them too.
I would say that Yeah, I mean, no, that's so, like, it does change how I view them. I mean, again, I'm viewing things as like they currently stand. And so I with Denver, with the current roster, which I think we're penciling in them keeping Peyton Watson, I have them ahead of the Lakers. But if they lose Peyton Watson or they lose Christian Brown or Cam Johnson, I think there's a drop off to that next player. So that is a big depth hit, even with Christian Brown having the off season that he had this past year. And then also if the Lakers get Kuminga or someone of that ilk to start, like that does tilt it the Lakers direction. So I think it's close. I'm not saying that Denver's like much better than the Lakers, but I would say that going back to last season, for example, like with their healthy starting group, was a top 10 defense now. And people would look at kind of the season long number and it was like, yeah, well, they were depleted for most of the season, which is a factor here. Can Watson stay healthy? Can Gordon stay healthy? Can Johnson and Brown stay healthy? So I'm not denying that they have injury risk. I'm just saying like their projected healthy version actually had a defensive ceiling that was relatively high. And I would argue higher than the Lakers defensive ceiling last year. But then it was also like, I mean, they got swept by OKC, but like most of those games were close. They came down to final shots or overtime or whatever. They had a big win over San Antonio at the end of the season. So I just felt like they did match up better with some of the top teams, those two teams specifically at times last season. But look, if the Lakers get Kuminga, they get PJ Washington, like I would put them ahead of Denver, even if Denver is able to retain everybody.
I do think that that's the missing piece to the puzzle right now for the Lakers. It's that if it's Kuminga, PJ Washington, and Derek Jones Jr., whoever it is, right, that winds up being that starting caliber wing. Okay, especially if then you add a Matisse Thybulle or something like that and on the heels of that. It starts to become pretty clear what the Lakers have at that point. And you start to get more optimistic about what this team can be and how stylistically they're going to fit alongside Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves. So that's where I start to get really excited. It's right now we're at a spot where we know that the roster is not complete, or at least we hope the roster is not complete. They complete this thing. They add in that final piece. And all right, we're going to start to have those conversations about them being up there in the Western Conference and certainly a real threat. There's always that era of unpredictability here, especially right now with how much parity there is around the NBA. But I think we're starting to get a sense of what this roster can be. I love the Zaire Williams addition. Add in a piece like Kuminga. Okay, I think you're ready to go make a real push here.
I think like if they get off Hardy and DK, let's just say hypothetically, they're able to dump those two guys in a Kuminga trade. I have Hardy right now as probably the 12th or 13th man on the current roster. I have Dalton as the 15th man. So if you're taking, let's just argue, two of your bottom three players on your roster and flipping that into a starter and exactly. A legit rotation guy, that's where like the talent discrepancy and the talent boost that the Lakers get at that point, I think that vaults them to just a different level.
Yeah. 100%. That's exactly and that's what they needed to do last year. That was one of the challenges, you know, JJ Redick. How many times did you look down his bench and say, yeah, I can't put those guys in right now? You would definitely alleviate that situation if you were able to take, you said, Hardy, Connect, turn them into a Jonathan Kuminga, turn them into a whoever, right? Turn them into a starting caliber talent. Okay, that does a lot, not just for the Lakers starting lineup, but also for the bench rotation and just the depth of the squad in general. With Kuminga, Kaluma, and Okereke on the floor together, God help the announcers. Yeah, I have tripped and fallen over Okereke's name a few too many times already this summer, and I'm not even 100% sure I'm pronouncing it correctly right now, so...
You've been knocking Mamukelashvili out of the park, though. I've been practicing that for like the last 2 weeks now. I'm still not all the way there. So,
my favorite version is Okereke. That's the one that I.
Damn it, Jovan! Now I'm definitely like. Now when I do the play by play later today, I'm definitely going to say it that way.
3 o'clock game today, by the way. Early start.
The more time goes by, the more I'm confident Rob will not make another move to save the MLE money for next summer. This is the roster. I hope that's not the case. Because I look at what they did and I see, okay, Mamu's salary dipping, Austin's salary only going up by 4% instead of 8%, which Jovan reported on. I look at stuff like that and I think, you know what? We look at that, we assume that's non-taxpayer MLE. That could also just be flexibility for even the taxpayer MLE moving forward. You know what I mean? Like that, that could be flexibility just for flexibility's sake, and understanding that you, whichever mechanism you have to potentially add to the roster next summer, there's a good chance that you may not have access to it after that, once you really have your team locked in. So my hope is that there's another move coming, that there's something else that's going to be on the way here, and not that they're going to look at things and say, well, you know, we did enough so far. Let's finish it off next year, and then we can go from there.
I think something else is coming. It's just a matter of, is it a bigger starting level move, or is it clearing out some of the back end guys to go get the Thibault or the Spencer Jones or someone of that ilk?
Yeah. Yahoo Sports did the 6 worst contracts of the summer. Okay. Was that before or after the Gary Trent signing?
Just came out yesterday, I think.
Okay.
Or today. Yeah.
So I'm assuming Gary Trent was the worst.
He was third. They have Kessler as the worst contract. Yeah.
To say Kessler is unproven and we will be the 6th seed. Guys, how much, when you see stuff like this though, how much of it is, if you have something that is unexpected regarding the Lakers, either in a positive or a negative light, that generates engagement? How much of a factor do you think that is when you see stuff like this come out?
Always a factor. We've always gotten thrown into strange conversations. But even then, like, I want to know who wrote that, because that's like, I had to actually argue that Kessler's contract came in a little bit lower than I thought it would. And I think part of that is because of the pick capital that they gave up. But like, Kessler's really good. I'm looking forward to Laker fans kind of getting to know his game and how he can contribute.
I have the 6 worst contracts here that they did a graphic. So okay. It's Trae Young as the worst one, which I would actually agree that. I mean, Gary Trent is like worse compared to his level of player, which I think he's a minimum or at best like a $5-6 million player per year, not a 16. But Trae Young, I just, they competed against no one to sign him to that. Then Kessler 2nd, Gary Trent Jr. 3rd, DeAndre Jordan 4th, John Collins 5th, Tobias Harris 6th. That's the 6 worst contracts this summer.
Why the hell is John Collins on this list?
I don't get
He's got 2 years non-guaranteed on that. It's a one-year deal.
Who wrote this?
I think it's fine. Ben Rohrbach of Yahoo.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I do think that's
Trae and Gary to me are by far the 2 worst. I don't think anyone is close to those 2. And I would not have Kessler on this list.
I think Kessler is an out of sight, out of mind thing. They haven't seen him play in a while, and people are forgetting what he actually is as a defensive player, as a rebounder. I mean, Jovan, you and I were standing right there the other day when he talked about, JJ Redick wants him shooting the 3. Mm-hmm. If that is a thing, and again,
I think we want him shooting the 3.
Yeah,
we want him shooting that too. Absolutely. But my point is that, and we only saw a few attempts from him, but if that is a thing, if he is even a corner 3 type of guy, that makes a big difference in his value as well. I don't see how Walker Kessler is considered a bad contract if you have any recollection of what he is as a player. If you're completely discounting him because he only played 5 games last year, I think you need to go back and watch the clip of Walker Kessler talking about his surgery from last year, and kind of the way that he almost said what he shouldn't say in that moment in terms of, you know, the Jazz and their willingness to for him to get the surgery at that time.
Also, I went back and looked, and if you look at the first 3 years of his career, the games played, it's a little underwhelming if you go season by season. But when you look at how things played out in each of those 3 seasons, somewhere between 4 to 7 games over the end of the season, he just magically started resting games, including multiple Jazz players as the Jazz were tanking. So if you add in those games that he was healthy up until the very end of the season, then started resting, he actually has played 71 games per season over his first 3 years, which by modern NBA standards, that's like an Ironman. If you're giving me 71 games from a player, only 2 Lakers played more than 71 games last year, Jake and DA. So I think there's a notion out there that he's this injury prone player who could ever stay healthy. And you look at the totals, but with the actual context of Utah rested him nearly 20 games total over those first 3 years, that changes how you view his availability.
All right, let's go here. Josh Harold said, love the content, guys. Lakers Collective LN. The block BB third scoring option means less LeBron had to change his role with Luka AR. People will be surprised by this team. He's less LeBron had to change his role. So what's saying losing LeBron isn't that impactful because he was the third guy and that isn't as meaningful. Now I would contend, and I'm not trying to say they're going to be bad without LeBron James, but I don't want to undersell the impact of LeBron. Part of LeBron being the third guy wasn't because he needed to be the third guy. Part of it was because the team needed him to be the third guy. And he was also the most capable of those three of being the third guy. So I don't want to try to spin this to, oh, they're losing LeBron is no big deal. He's still LeBron effing James, right? Yeah. Like this, that matters. That doesn't mean that they can't have a good season. But I don't think we can just dismiss it and say, well, losing LeBron, no problem. They'll be totally fine. He isn't all that good anyway. I can't land there.
I think if I'm understanding this question correctly, I think their point is more that LeBron is not a natural third option. And This is one thing that Redick would talk about is that, like, you got three quarterbacks on the floor. It's a little strange. You've got to play a little bit different basketball, and having players who are a little bit more natural, like, this is what I do, is play off of the ball and play off of two other players. That, yes, of course you lose LeBron and there's no getting around that, like you just said, but you do get some benefit from having guys who are more naturally suited for that type of role that isn't just trying to make it fit to figure it out the way that LeBron was.
I think to this point, and you guys can correct me if you feel differently, I did feel last year when they only had two of the big three up until March when everything clicked and it was just basketball nirvana. Up until that point, it did feel like when they had two of the big three, things just flowed better, right? And so that was where there was the whole avalanche to start the season of, are they better with you know, without LeBron, or look at their success without LeBron. I think it was more so we saw, like, when Austin went out, there was the stretch with Luka and LeBron where things really click in, with LeBron being the number two option, or when LeBron would be out and it'd be those two, or even briefly when Luka would be out, it was just simplified. Like, I think having two of those higher usage shot creators and playmakers, it just fit better, and then having the guys playing off of that. So that, I think there's something to that, like, general notion.
Sure.
That's not to say that they are going to be better without LeBron. That's not to say they're not going to miss LeBron. I think there's just, like, a general talent element here of, with LeBron, they had three all-star level guys. Now they really need Walker Kessler to pop and be another all-star level guy. But I think in general, there was something to, and this is why people made the case, should someone come off the bench? Should Austin come off the bench? Should LeBron come off the bench? Like, and kind of stagger it more. It just felt a little cleaner when they only had two of those three guys on the floor for much of the season up until March.
I think it's certainly a simplified version of things. All right, we've got a few more to get through, then we'll wrap up here. Do y'all think Matisse Thybulle could be on hold because we might have a Kuminga deal almost done and an open roster spot coming with it? That's the ideal. I think the ideal scenario would be something like that. I need a picture of Luka, Mamu, Kessler, and Austin crouching in Adidas track suits that are a size too small. That would intimidate us into the one seed.
The old Slavic crouch out in the...
Oh, man. All right, guys. We have made it through our chat questions, our comments. We've gotten ourselves caught up, which was one of our goals for the day. Appreciate everybody for joining us. Obviously, we are still waiting. I do think a lot, by the way, people say, well, where's the Kuminga deal? I think a lot's waiting for that LeBron guy to figure out life and decide where it is that he wants to be. Whether that's coming tomorrow or sometime into next week, we'll see. I know Shams Charania just had some stuff that was making the rounds on social media about, you know, maybe this could go into next week or so. But I do think there's more coming here for the Lakers, and excited for what's to come. So all that is to say, make sure that you do hit the subscribe button right here on the Lakers Collective YouTube channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you listen to podcasts. Pete, Jovan, as always, pleasure talking Lakers basketball with you guys. This was a fun one.
Yes, sir. Let's do it again.
One quick thing, guys. I guess we had brought this one up. We didn't answer it. If Kessler getting in the lab with Pau Incendies Productions, what do you guys think about that partnership?
So if I could speak on that real quick, like, Kessler doesn't have a really high usage rate, but he's phenomenal on putbacks. He's one of the best, like, mic and drill guys in the league. And to be good at putbacks, you don't really usually have a big window to kind of gather yourself and take your time. You got to get the ball and go right back up with it. And so if he can gets the ball on the left side of the rim, extremely comfortable making left-hand layups that are kind of tough. Or if he gets the ball on the right-hand side of the rim, he'll do that Jay Huff reverse dunk type stuff. Not quite the same amount of hot sauce on it, but he finds those little windows and keeps the ball high and goes up quickly. This is one of the things I loved about Powell, Trev, is just that, like, keep the ball high, finish high, left-hand hook, right-hand hook. Powell had a whole suite of moves and shot making from mid-range that Kessler doesn't have, but there is that sort of fundamental keep the ball high, make a shot with either hand, that in the limited shot attempts that Kessler does get, he's actually pretty good at these.
Yeah, well, I would love to see that from him. You know, Powell obviously is a great guy to follow in terms of his overall talents, and like you said, that it may not be something where you are running the offense through him the way the Lakers could at times with Pau Gasol, and he acts as that offensive hub for them. You're certainly not going to be doing that type of action nearly as much with a Walker Kessler, but in those opportunities that he gets, he does need to be very efficient doing that. And this is a guy who is an ambidextrous shot blocker. Can he be a finisher in the paint as well and give you those kind of little hook shots there at the rim? Sometimes it'll come off of an offensive rebound. It may come off of the little funnel pass. You know that Colin Sexton, very, very fond of the drop-off passes to Walker Kessler. So that can be a very important part of his offensive game. He's not going to be a 15 plus point per game guy, but somewhere in that 10 to 12-ish points per game, and he does that hyper efficient while protecting the rim, giving you rebounding. Fantastic. That's exactly what you're looking for out of Walker Kessler.
And Powell is also someone who expanded to the three-point line later in his career, became a really good stretch good big. So I also think he could help him with that transition.
For sure. For sure. All right, everybody. Appreciate all of you. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.